16 minutes after 4 o'clock on your Friday downtown program. Rich Kimble, Ryan Wehning, Brian Stackpole here. And time to talk some fantasy baseball. Only a coincidence that all three of us have drafts coming up this weekend here, but we thought to get the best insight, let's go to the best in the business when it comes to fantasy baseball information. Ray Flowers from Sirius XM Fantasy Sports Radio, The Drive, 7 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. You can also follow Ray on Twitter at Baseball Guys, and be sure to get your copy of the always awesome FantasyAlarm.com Major League Baseball Draft Guide at FantasyAlarm.com. Ray, good to have you back with us.
Hey, thanks, Rich. Ryan, I appreciate you guys having me on. Appreciate it. It's always fun checking in with you guys in March every year.
Well, we're ready to pick your brain like we always do, but let's start with some sort of general strategy here this afternoon. And a couple of great things that were in the guide this year that I thought were very interesting. First of all, in a standard draft league, does the first round really matter? Is it a bit overrated?
Yeah, and in the article in that draft guide, fantasyalarm.com/Ray, I'll just get out of the way at the top and I won't keep mentioning it. It really doesn't matter, and I say that, and I don't mean that, you know, no one should care or whatever, but, you know, what we end up doing most of the time is we field questions, whether it's on Twitter or emails or on the radio, and it's first round, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. And quite frankly, everyone knows who the top 25-ish players are, and as long as you're not taking someone that's outside of that, you're not making a bad decision. But further, if you look at the actual data, what the data shows you is the scary part and why that we spend far too much time talking about the first round. There's a decade-long study that Baseball HQ has done, and in their study they've looked at the top 15 players each year according to average draft position information, and then they've tracked that over the course of the year, and at the end of the season gone back and saying, how many of those top 15 players finish the season as top 15 players? How effective are we at predicting those first-round players? And the fact is, we're in the 35 to 40% success range every year, meaning we're basically at a third of the players taken in the top 15 every year finish in the top 15 every year. So people spend too much time with it just in general, but secondarily, we don't have a great success rate in predicting that first-round success.
Another article that I love from the Draft Guide, because I've subscribed to this theory for years, there are always those guys who fall in love with the prospects and the rookies and can't wait to get them, and in an auction league will overspend on them, but the recommendation is pretty clear, don't spend on rookies.
Yeah, and I mean, this seems like such an obvious one to me personally, and it causes great consternation, I got to be honest, guys. I mean, because it's like... A third of the questions are first round, a third of the questions are rookies. That's like what it is every year. And it's like, guys, I mean, and I went through it in the draft guide and I talked about the elite level players. I'm not talking about the 12th ranked prospect for the Rockies or anything like that. I'm talking about like the top 25, 30, 40 players year after year. And the success rate there is miserable. It's awful. We don't know which players are going to get the opportunity, because almost always the only way they get an opportunity at the big league level is if there's struggles or injury at the big league level, and we just don't know. We don't have any idea how a lot of these young players are going to perform right off the hop. Go back and look, folks, at Mike Trout's first year. He hit 210. Okay, the great Mike Trout couldn't figure it out the first time through the big leagues. It's okay to take a chance. It's okay to take a risk on a rookie in fantasy baseball. You can do that, but you want to do that in the 23rd round. You want to do that in the 27th round. You don't want to make the decision to take that guy in the 12th or 13th or 15th round like so many people do, because you're counting on a player that history suggests will not have the success you are expecting in his first season.
Ray, what, if any, next-gen stats or sabermetric stats do you consider when you're evaluating or projecting what players are going to do?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think that, you know, we've got a lot of people that are obviously much more familiar with that now than they were, like, say, 10 years ago. But I also think that sometimes we get too much in the weeds, you know, and so I don't want people to get overly confused with everything. So what I basically tell people is let's look at both sides real quickly. We're looking at batters. You know, you don't look at the 5x5 numbers. Like, I don't care how many home runs the guy hit. I don't care how many, you know, stolen bases he had last year. Those are not numbers that really concern me. What people should be looking at is the skills that underline the performance, whether we're pitchers or hitters. And people get too caught up in looking at the numbers and not looking at the skills. So when we talk about an offensive player, the things that you should be looking at are their swing strike rate, their contact ratios, how good are they at putting the ball in play, what are their walk and strikeout rates, which tend to tell you a lot of times what kind of approach this player has. Does he strike out all the time and not help the team? Does he take a pitch and draw a walk, meaning he probably understands the strike zone a little bit better? So strikeout rates, walk rates, you want to look at line drive, ground ball, and fly ball ratios. What kind of hitter is this player? Did he have a high home run mark last year despite not hitting a lot of fly balls? How did he do that? We have to explore further. So I think, again, it's more about the skills there. When we talk about the pitchers, same kind of thing. You want to look at strikeout rates, walk rates, ground ball rates. Those are the top three things to look at. Then you can start digging a little deeper and looking at things like batting average on balls in play. You can look at left on base percentages, home run rates. Nothing in its own is enough. But if you put enough of the pieces together, you start to paint that picture and understand what you're dealing with.
We're talking with Ray Flowers from SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio's The Drive. Well, let's talk some specific guys here, Ray. Who are a few players that you've got your eye on who are likely to perform either better than their average draft position or earn more value than what they're likely to go for in most auctions?
Yeah, I wrote an article. It's in that draft guide. Make sure to draft Domingo Santana. Like this, I think I wrote it on December like 29th, to be honest with you. And then, you know, the trade of Chris Davis out of Milwaukee really opened the door for him. So I think that article was a little prescient. I mean, they do call him the Oracle guys, so maybe that's something to do with it. I saw the future there. But I think that he's a really good guy to target late. A player that, is going up draft boards, so it certainly does depend upon, what type of league you're in and all of that. But he's a guy that's going late. Some other players that I like late, and again, it depends on your league. It depends on your setup. It depends on the, I'm not going to say competency. How about the experience level of the players that are in your league? Some of these players are going to sneak through in leagues that are newer. They're not going to sneak through when we're talking about later round gets. A guy like Carlos Santana, there was some talk of him hitting leadoff. He won't, but he's always got a nice game. He gains value when we're talking about points leagues for his ability to get on base. Will Myers qualifies at multiple positions. Talk about a rookie guy a couple of years ago. Everyone had to have. Then he had a couple of down season because of injury. He's back to health, so I think he marks himself as a very good target this season. Kyle Hendricks, a pitcher of the Cubs, I have to admit to not being overly impressed by any one thing he does. But the total package, it's good. You know, there's enough strikeouts there. There's a ton of ground balls. He doesn't beat himself with the walk. You put it all together, and it's a nicely skilled guy that could certainly take a step forward this season. And then I'll just throw out one other name, Matt Holliday. He's old. No one likes him. He's the antithesis of what everyone wants on draft day when they're putting the team together. He did have a down season last year because of the bad physical situation he was dealing with his lower half. But he looks good in spring. He's playing some first base, so he might add that second position to his mix. And let's not forget that despite the struggles last year, he still had a .394 on-base percentage, which is borderline elite.
Ray, I'm a downright miser when it comes to paying for stats or saves and or drafting it even close to the mid-rounds. But when I finally do get around to doing it, I need to find that handcuff guy. Who are some guys that are the obvious handcuffs to closers?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I mean, honestly, you can go either way. I don't have a problem with people that don't want to spend $21 on Craig Kimbrell or, a fifth-round draft pick. I totally get that. There is so much turnover. A third to half of closers generally do flip-flop over the course of the season. That's very common. Very common to see half the teams in Major League Baseball make changes, be it because of poor performance or health. I think with the Yankees, you've got two obvious guys there. Miller will start the year as the closer because of Aroldis Chapman is suspended for the first month. Both Miller and Betances are great arms. I would have no problem rostering either or both. I have actually rostered both of them myself in multiple leagues. In Tout Wars and Labor, I did that. Miller, obviously, is a little bit higher because he'll have the chance to close. Aroldis Vizcaíno with the Braves, I guess, is going to be the setup guy. It sounds like they really want Jason Grilly to work the ninth inning so they can try to drive his value up to trade him. Grilly had a little bit of struggles today, but it looks like he'll get the chance to open the season as the closer. I would not anticipate that losing. I would still think Vizcaíno's got the chance to lead that team in saves. So if he's out there, he'd be a target of mine. Don't trust Steve Cishek at all after what happened last year with him. I think Joaquin Benoit is a better pitcher. And I think sooner rather than later, he will end up in the ninth inning. And I also would say that Sean Doolittle, who, when healthy, is really, really good, I don't trust him at all, guys. Hurt all last year. He's had some hiccups this year with his arm already. I think Ryan Madsen, who no one is talking about, is a great final-round target if you're talking about a guy that could end up getting some saves at some point.
All right, we said we'd allow ourselves to be extremely selfish for one guy each. So each of us are going to give you one guy that we either have on our team or are prospecting for and get your thoughts on him. Ryan, I'll let you go first.
I've got a keeper issue with Freddie Freeman. I got him at $20, and I'm kind of concerned that he's never, ever going to turn into that next-level first baseman cornerstone player. Is that too high a price to keep him at?
Mixed league, Ryan, for you there?
Yep, mixed league.
Okay. Freddie Freeman, to me, is going to end up being a disappointment, just like Eric Hosmer will. And it's not due to either of the guys. It's due to the expectations. Both Freddie Freeman and Eric Hosmer are going to be very good borderline all-star players for a decade. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. In the specific case of Freeman, everyone was freaking out last season because of the lack of, you know, protection around him in the Braves lineup. Oh, my gosh, he's going to be terrible. Oh, he's not going to get it done. Well, in 200 fewer at-bats in 2014, he had the same home run total. He was on pace for more RBIs. And his OPS, yeah, guys, it was really affected by his teammates. It went down 6 points. So, I mean, Freddie Freeman, as long as his wrist is healthy, and right now there is a little bit of debate about that because he's already had that setback, I think Freddie Freeman would be fine. If I had him at $20 in a mixed league, I'd be totally okay with that.
All right. Brian, your turn.
A.J. Reed, how much playing time is he actually going to get in Houston? Is Jonathan Singleton actually a reasonable threat for him at first?
Yeah, I mean, it might even be Tyler White seeing work at first base. Tyler White has been crushing it in spring, and that's a very dicey situation. We talked to Brian McTaggart recently of MLB on the drive, and he kind of said, look, Singleton, they want to do it, but he's just not, it's not happening. And with the holes in his game and his really poor performance to this point in spring, there's a chance that Singleton doesn't even make this team. That's kind of the prevailing wisdom right now, that they send him back down to the minors. I don't think Reed is the guy they turn to immediately, though. I think Reed also probably sees time in the minors. I would look at this team maybe using a combination of Marwin Gonzalez, you know, maybe Matt Duffy, maybe Tyler White, just kind of cycling these guys through at first base. So if I was looking at the whole thing, I would have Reed ahead of Singleton in terms of who I would want for the course of the season, but I think it might be June before we see Reed.
All right, and my guy here, I've got Travis Shaw of the Red Sox at $5 in an American League-only league. Now, I've got Eric Hosmer, I've got Danny Valencia at the corners. Should I be prospecting for another corner guy, or will Shaw pay off for me?
That's a tough one. I wish I had a more definitive answer, but I don't. Here's how I read the situation, though. As of today, Pablo Sandoval's got the issue with his back. He's in the second year of a $90-plus million contract. They want him to be the guy, obviously. There's concerns about his health, though they decided today not to run an MRI. So apparently his back issue is not that big of a deal. He's always going to be who he is, an overweight guy that's still a very good player. Sandoval underperformed last season. Very surprised by that because Fenway is a park in which he should have a lot of success. I still anticipate him getting more work over the course of the season than Shaw. I think Shaw for $5 is totally fine in the AL-only league. He should play some first. He should play some third, depending upon your league qualifications. That dual eligibility is very nice. Shaw's had a great spring, and they want to get him active, but I have a feeling he'll end up being utilized kind of like the team uses Brock Holt. So I would pencil Shaw in for, you know, 300 or so at bats. He got more than that, great. But even if it is only 300 bats for $5 in the AL-only league, you're in fine shape.
All right. That sounds good. Ray Flowers, Sirius XM Fantasy Sports Radio. Listen to The Drive, 7 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. Follow Ray on Twitter at Baseball Guys, and you got to get your hands on, the best preseason guide in the business, the FantasyAlarm.com Major League Baseball Draft Guide at FantasyAlarm.com. Ray, we could do 2 hours with you. Always great talking with you. Thank you for making time for us in this busy time of year for you.
You bet, guys, and I'll look forward to the call next March.
That sounds great. Thanks, Ray.
Thank you.
431 here on Downtown.